Chapter 23. The only Jew in Clanton was Mr. Harvey Cohn, a dapper little man who'd been selling shoes and handbags to ladies for decades. His store was on the square next door to the Sullivan Law Firm in a row of buildings he had bought during the Depression. He was a widower, and his children had fled Clanton after high school. Once a month, Mr. Cohn drove to Tupelo to worship in the nearest synagogue. Cohn's shoes aimed at the higher end of the market, which was tricky in a small town like Clanton. The few wealthy ladies in town preferred shopping in Memphis, where they could pay higher prices and talk about it back home. To make his shoes attractive, Mr. Cohn put shockingly high prices on them, then slashed them with deep discounts. The local ladies could then throw out any price they wanted when they showed off their latest purchases. He ran the store himself, opening early and staying late, usually with the help of a part-time student. 2 years before I arrived in Clanton, he hired a 16-year-old black kid named Sam Ruffin to unpack inventory, move stock, clean the place, answer the phone. Sam proved to be bright and industrious. He was courteous, mannerly, well-dressed, and before long he could be trusted to run the store, while Mr. Cohn went home every day at precisely 11:45 for a quick lunch and a long nap. A lady by the name of Iris Durant dropped in around noon one day and found Sam all alone. Iris was 41 years old, the mother of two teenage boys, one in Sam's class at Clanton High. She was mildly attractive, liked to flirt and wear miniskirts, and usually selected shoes from Mr. Cohn's more exotic inventory. She tried about 24 varieties, bought nothing, and took her time about it. Sam knew his products and was very careful with her feet. She was back the next day, same time, shorter skirt, heavier makeup. Barefoot, she seduced Sam on Mr. Cohn's desk in his small office just behind the cash register. Thus began a torrid affair that would change both their lives. Several times a week, Iris went shoe shopping. Sam found a more comfortable spot upstairs on an old sofa. He would lock the store for 15 minutes, turn off the lights, and dash up. Iris's husband was a sergeant in the Mississippi Highway Patrol. Alarmed at the number of new shoes in her closet, he became suspicious. Suspicion had been a way of life with Iris. He hired Harry Rex to investigate. A Cub Scout could have caught the lovers. 3 straight days she walked into Cohn's at the same time. 3 straight days, Sam quickly locked the front door, eyes darting in all directions. 3 straight days, the lights went off, etc. On the 4th day, Harry Rex and Rafe sneaked in the back of the store. They heard noises upstairs. Rafe barged into the love nest and in 5 seconds gathered enough evidence to send both of them packing. Mr. Cohn fired Sam an hour later. Harry Rex filed the divorce that afternoon. Iris was later admitted to the hospital with cuts, abrasions, and a broken nose. Her husband beat her with his fists until she was unconscious. After dark, 3 uniformed state troopers knocked on the door of Sam's home in Lowtown. They explained to his parents that he was wanted by the police in connection with some vague embezzling charge at Cohn's. If convicted, he could be sentenced to 20 years in prison. They also told them, off the record, of course, that Sam had been caught having sex with a white lady, another man's wife, and there was a contract on his head, $5,000. Iris left town disgraced, divorced, without her children, and afraid to return. I had heard different versions of Sam's story. It was old gossip by the time I arrived in Clanton, but it was still sensational enough to find its way into many conversations. In the South, it was not unusual for white men to keep black mistresses, but Sam's was the first documented case of a white woman crossing the color line in Clanton. Baggy had been the one to tell me the story. Harry Rex had confirmed much of it. Miss Callie refused to talk about it. Sam was her youngest, and he couldn't come home. He had fled, dropped out of high school, and spent the past 2 years living off his brothers and sisters. Now he was calling me. I went to the courthouse and dug through drawers of old files. I found no record of an indictment against Sam Ruffin. I asked Sheriff Coley if he had an outstanding warrant. He dodged the question and wanted to know why I was poking around in such an old case. I asked him if Sam would be arrested if he came home. Again, no direct answer.
"Be careful, Mr. Trainer," he warned, but would not elaborate.
I went to Harry Rex and asked about the now legendary contract on Sam's head. He described his client, Sergeant Durant, as a former Marine, an expert marksman with any number of weapons, a career cop, a hothead who was horribly embarrassed by Iris's indiscretion, and who felt the only honorable way out was to kill her lover. He had thought about killing her, but didn't want to go to prison. He felt safer killing a black kid. A Ford County jury would be more sympathetic.
"And he wants to do it himself," Harry Rex explained. "That way he can save the $5,000.
He enjoyed delivering such dire news to me, but he did admit that he hadn't seen his client in a year and a half, and he wasn't sure if Mr. Durant hadn't already remarried.